I want to see guys who've created 400%, 500%, 2000% winners in the past. So I look for that with a management team. And again, I've been around long enough that, you know, I want to, again, most of my companies, I can point to an exit that they've had in the past by building a company, and they've made their wealth not by collecting options, not by flipping stock in the bull market. They've actually built stuff.
Jeff Phillips, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Doing well, Andy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. We first met at the 25 Rule Symposium, and I actually had listened to you in the past, but you made a comment to me while we were there that you're more excited and more interested, I would even say the word, in the natural resource space than really you've ever been. Talk to me about that. What's gotten you so excited, and especially about some of the junior stocks here? Why?
Yeah, Andy, first off, I'm kind of an activist investor. So your listeners know I take large positions typically in a dozen companies. I have a saying that you have to have at least 6 to 12 companies in the natural resource space to cover all your bases. If you have less than that, you don't get the upside when you have a big discovery. And if you have more than that, you don't get to benefit as much in your overall portfolio if you have too many stocks in your portfolio. So I'm an activist investor. I also consult for a lot of the companies that I'm a large shareholder. I tend to be one of the larger shareholders in those companies. So back to your question, you asked me why I'm excited. You know, well, I'm always excited. I look at the natural resource market of kind of like floating around a lazy river. You spend about 10 years floating and you do okay. You know, I've had some great wins over the last 6-7 years, but you know, what we all really like is a bull market. And when you get a bull market, it changes from a lazy river to a very exciting, a rapid event. And, you know, everything does well. So I think we're coming into one of those markets where, you know, I still want to own the top quality companies with the best structures. And I'm really into structure. Structures are one of my big things in these companies. And, but, you know, again, I do well when it's a lazy market, but, you know, it's always fun to be in a bull market. And I think we have one coming not too far around the corner in the natural resource sector. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Why is that? Why would you say, and again, specifically, we can go down each subsector if you would, but why specifically, why is that? Why are you so excited?
I'm excited because it's been about, you know, our last real bull market was the 2009 to 2011, and that was after the real estate crash. Before that, the last really good bull market was after the dot-com crash. And, you know, the 01 market to 07 was a really good market. Then you have to go back to when I first came in the business and learned from one of the best, Rick Rule, and others. And that was, I don't remember the 92 recession that well because I was just coming out of college and it didn't concern me that much. But the resource market, when I came into the market from 95 until BREX, was an incredibly bull market. You could barely do anything wrong. I mean, every turkey was flying and the best of the best were doing incredibly well. So my only concern right now is, you know, I tend to see the resource market do really well when the overall financial markets get the fluff taken out of them because people gravitate back to the hard assets, things that are real. So, you know, at this point, you know, we're in an everything is up market, the stock market, cryptocurrencies, real estate. I'm excited to be positioning for what I see to be a big bull market. And I am doing financings, but, you know, I have a little bit of caution because I still think we might have a period of time where the overall markets, financial markets get the air let out of them. And then I think, you know, but either way I'm positioning now for that because I'm patient and I don't think we're that far off from a big bull market.
Yeah. Is there a specific sector that you're excited more about than others, or is it just really in general? And then I want to talk to you about evaluation. I, too, am very keen on examining a company's balance sheet, specifically share structure. That is my number one rule, not the only rule, but my number one rule that I invest in. But yeah, talk to me about what's the most exciting in the sector. Sectors.
You know, I'm not commodity specific in the sector. I come back looking at structures. I look at assets. A lot of these companies, whether you're talking about uranium, copper, gold, silver, iron, nickel, you know, they don't have any of it, or they've started to make a discovery. So again, what I'm looking for is a real project that has the chance of becoming something. And I'm looking at the share structure again and the people involved, their track records. You know, really what's most important to me is share structure and people. I have to have both of those to make an asset work. So I, you know, like I said, I have probably a dozen companies, and those are divided into different commodities. I think about 20% of those are, might have 14 companies right now that I'm a large shareholder. I own other companies, but these are ones I advise. And I also am a, you know, significant shareholder. So, you know, 25% of those companies are in what we call prospect generators. I have, you know, probably three copper plays. I probably have four or five gold plays. And some of those commodity plays are part of the prospect generators. You know, I just did a uranium deal, you know, but what I'm really bullish on is that you're starting to see, you know, and this isn't new. I mean, it's, you know, people attribute it to the new administration that, you know, we're trying to get our supply lines and our own production, and it's become a priority, which is true. But the fact of the matter is, you know, if you take copper, we're under discovering, and you know, our deficits are going to go up in copper, regardless of what administration's in. So, you know, I was talking about the rare earth problem back in 2009 that the Chinese control. I financed three of the four U.S. listed rare earth companies back then. You know, it's the same story. You know, it's coming to the forefront again. But, you know, it's just security of supply. And it's not just the security of supply. It's the fact that we have, you know, not been exploring, not permitting has been a pain in the ass. And, you know, we're behind the eight ball here. So I'm, you know, again, all of these things that we talk about, whether it's AI, you know, growth here, growth there, it all takes metals, and those metals all come out of the ground. So there's a confluence, I guess, or whatever the word is, of things coming together. So, you know, I'm pretty bullish, and I'm bullish on stuff in safe jurisdictions. So.
Okay. Work that out a little bit for me. Are there jurisdictions that, well, instead of that, I don't want to ask that you wouldn't go to, but are there jurisdictions that you really like and look for, or what makes a good jurisdiction for you?
Yeah. You know, basically I've always, you know, throughout my career of almost 30 years now, which is scary in the resource sector, I've stepped aside a few times and done real estate development and other things, but I've mostly been in the resource market, natural resource market. You know, I've always invested in North America, South America, parts of Europe. Australia. I've never done a lot. I'm not to say I never have, but I don't invest a lot in Asia, Africa. I've done very little investing. I don't understand those places as well. And you know, but that's not to say that you can't make money. There's people that specialize in understanding the country risk, and you know, and again, I've done very well in Mexico over the last 30 years. I've had some big discoveries. I've had some companies be bought out. But Mexico, you know, things ebb and flow, and Mexico right now is not, it got pretty bad. I think it's coming back now for exploration companies. It'll be a slow haul, but things change. But I tend to focus in North America, South America, and, you know, places like Finland, Sweden, you know, and things like that. So,
yeah, you know, I'm going to talk to all my viewers and listeners here. I think that's really great advice. I'm taking notes here is really to, you don't need the entire mapping, but what you need to do is just concentrate on a few places that are interesting and that you're good at and that you feel safe and comfortable. Would you agree with that, Jeff?
I would absolutely agree with that, Andy. You know, again, it's very, you need to understand, and it's like an investor. You really need to feel comfortable with your management team. You need to have focus. You can't be all over the place. There's so many people I talk to in this business, and they say, well, you look at my portfolio of stocks, and I say, sure, go ahead and email it to me. And they email it to me, and there's 72 stocks on it. Well, you know, you're not right, focused. You can't track that many stocks. And most of these people, I do it, you know, well, I mean, I'm somewhat retired, but I do it for a living, basically. I talk to my companies weekly to see what's going on and make sure, you know, I kind of call it parental supervision, make sure they're spending the money correctly and we're all in agreement. So,
yeah. Talk to me a little bit about share structure here. Some people might be confused on that, but what exactly does that mean to you, and what are you looking for in a share structure?
Well, hopefully I can say this in a way that's understandable and I don't go off on a tangent, which I often do. But, you know, most people, when you say share structure, the natural thing is how many shares are outstanding. And then the next argument is, you know, especially if I'm a value investor in the resource spaces, it doesn't really matter how many shares are outstanding. It's just the value to the asset. And if it's undervalued, it's undervalued. But But I disagree wholeheartedly with that. I think share structure means something. There's two major things there. The first part is that, you know, when you have a tighter share structure and less shares outstanding, you know, your cost of capital in the future can be a lot less, but it's not just the shares outstanding. It's who owns those shares. I want to know, you know, again, if, most of the companies, like I said, I've got, I think it's 14 companies I'm a large shareholder in right now. I think 11 of those, if not 12, at least 30% of the outstanding shares are owned by insiders and they're fully reporting. The fully reporting part is important in the natural resource space because you'll have lots of companies tell you, management and we own 40%. Well, that's friends and family and that's their next door neighbor, their broker, whatever they're called, you know, lumping it all together. I want to know how many shares are fully reporting. Which means that they're reporting those to the exchange. And in order to sell those, they have to report that also. So most of my companies, you'll see at the very least, they're 30%, I mean, 75% of my companies are 30% fully reporting. I think I have five past companies that aren't part of those companies and I'm still a big shareholder and I don't advise them, that have upwards of 70% of the shares fully reporting. So what that means is those people are in the boat with me. You know, when I get in that boat to go to the other shore with them, they're not getting out halfway. They're either getting to the other side of the ocean or we're all sinking together. So share structure to me is, you know, people call it skin in the game, but I want to know how many shares are fully reporting. Then I want to know after that, who are your big shareholders? They may not be fully reporting, but when I look at a Bravo Mining, a past company of mine, I financed before the IPO. Sure, the CEO owns 50% fully reporting, but their next biggest shareholder is BlackRock and Tembo, two large funds that each own 10%. They're not fully reporting, they're under 10%, but BlackRock isn't investing to flip a stock from 50 cents to a dollar. BlackRock needs to make a $1 billion asset to make a difference on their little natural resource portfolio. Those are the people I want to see investing with me. What I don't want to see is the typical Canadian players that, sorry, my phone's ringing, or this 4 month and a day type hold stuff or even less these life financings now where there's no hold and they're getting warrants. I want to know that the fellow shareholders that I'm involved with outside of the fully reporting shares, which is management and the board of directors, those shareholders that are like-minded to me, they want to see the company. They're going to give the companies several years to develop. That reduces the cost of capital in the future for that company because they're going to have to raise money again. These are exploration or development companies. So I want to know that they're likely to raise more money as they meet their milestones at higher prices. So hopefully that kind of explains structure to you, but that's what's important to me. It's who's on the team. Now, who are my teammates, management, the other shareholders? So it doesn't have to be a small number of shares outstanding. But what it does have to be is whatever that number is, I have to be able to add a lot of those shares up and see that, you know, again, insiders, I'll keep repeating it, and the other shareholders are like-minded.
Got it. Now, that's great advice, actually. I typically like to do, I don't do as deep a dive into the insiders, who they are. I like your idea. I love your idea of fully reporting, if you would. I do like to try to get at least 30% of the insiders own shares, just again, because I want to see that they have a significant backing. But how important is management to you in evaluating these companies and really the team?
It's the second biggest thing and right behind share structure. I want to find a management team that's been there and done that before. So and when I say that, I mean, they've built a company and sold a company. Or at the very least, they were a front runner in a market before it happened, and their company had a major market cap, and maybe the commodity price changed. But I want to see guys who created 400, 500%, 1,000%, 2,000% winners in the past. So I look for that with a management team. And again, I've been around long enough that, you know, most of my companies, I can point to an exit that they've had in the past by building a company, and they've made their wealth not by collecting options, not by flipping stock in the bull market. They've actually built stuff.
Yeah. Great answer. So what's your favorite model, if you would? Maybe model's the wrong word, but I'll use it. Is it an explorer? Is it a developer? Is it a royalty company? Is it a prospect generator, or are you just looking really where you see value relative to the stock price, relative to what's in the ground?
Well, remember, I write a big check in the financing, and often one of the larger checks in that financing. And I like to make sure the other people in the financing, whether the company's bringing them in or they're friends of mine, that, you know, we all have the same goal in place. So, you know, the model for me is I tend to be effective in advising companies when they're, you know, minuscule market caps. I just did a uranium deal that was a $2 million market cap. I mean, you know, crap. Here in California, yeah. That's an average house next door. So,
right.
But you know, up to like a $30 or $40 million market cap. And that's not because that's just what I'm really good at, giving advice and being a strategic advisor and sort of being an activist investor. And my goal is to see those companies graduate to $100 to $300 million market cap. And then that's out of my specialty. But if they've done well, and they have to execute too, it's not just about having good shareholders, but if they've executed, they're going to be able to raise money, a lot bigger chunks of money from institutionally. And I consider that a success for me. It doesn't mean I'll stop being a shareholder. I can give you three or four companies in that space right now that I financed at, you know, $20, $30 million market caps that are running $200 to $400 million market caps now. And I still think those assets are billion-dollar tier one assets. It's just, I'm still a shareholder. I just don't add as much value to that anymore because they've graduated to another level.
Yeah, again, and I'm talking to all of my viewers and listeners here. I think that is such an excellent point, is you know what you're good at and you know what your expertise are. You know what your investment personality is. You don't have to be, as you mentioned previously, all over the board. I do own some large companies, if you would, but I'd specifically look for early start greenfields, or it can be brownfields, but early startups, if you would. Just again, we're talking in Lassonde curve, or deep value in the middle of the Lassonde curve that I see as deep value, or really, really late going into production. That's just me and my personality. But again, I own some of the bigger players, but it's just not my specialty in evaluating them. And I think that comes across really well. Viewers and listeners, please take note of that with what Jeff said. I think that's a very key point. Let's talk about some specific companies again. Full disclosure, Jeff and I have not discussed previous to this interview is what specific company I want to give companies he has. I don't, if I do own any of these that he mentioned, I will give a full disclosure that I do own them. And if not, that's fine. None of these companies that, or if some company is a sponsor of mine, I will also fully disclose that. But Jeff, talk to me about specific companies that you like right now that you're into. Just give me a couple of them. Let's start with some gold and silver companies that you really like.
Let me preface that by saying, because I don't know all your listeners, that, you know, if you're somewhat experienced and have invested in junior mining stocks before and understand that market, then this interview is probably great for you. If you're somebody that is just a believer in the underlying commodities and you're interested in uranium or gold and silver, like you just said, and you don't understand the junior market, which is really the Wild West, it's, you know, granted, you can have some massive wins, but, you know, with a lot of risk in that space. And, you know, but again, if you like gold and silver and you're just coming into this space and you're talking about putting a little bit of your retirement account or something into that, you're not looking at the companies I'm talking about. I mean, this is really your, you know, this is a different risk level. You're looking at your Agnico Eagles, you're looking at your Newmonts, your Barricks, and you're getting advice from your broker if you want some gold exposure. If you like uranium, you're looking like at a Cameco or a Denison, or, you know, I can't think of a couple of other companies off the top of my head, but these are bigger companies, bigger market cap companies, either producing, and that's how you dip your toe into the natural resource space. If you do have some experience or you have a higher net worth, then you, with a junior resource space, again, that's what I specialize in. This is the high risk, but again, if you follow the structure model, look for companies with a good structure, and have a basket of those companies, you stand a chance of making some really good returns. But this isn't to bet. So back to your gold and silver question, you know, again,
let me jump on that. Thank you for saying that. Thank you. You're absolutely right. I talked to Rick about that, Rick Rule about that. Most investors should really stick with the bigger players, meaning the large cap, the Newmonts and the Barricks of the world, Agnico, et cetera. That's really all you should do. And that doesn't mean that's not advice, but it's just analyzing risk tolerance. And also you're going to exposure to the underlying commodity by investing in those companies. And that's what most people should do. advice, but that is a strong suggestion there. Also, full disclosure, this is the junior space, and I am fully aware that if we mention some company, it might move it. That's not our intention here. Our intention is for educational purpose only, but also to give you the list, maybe to start adding to your list of companies to check out and why Jeff likes them and why I potentially like them as well. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in the gold and silver space, I have, you know, again, these are companies that are drilling. So, you know, they've done well, but their results aren't out yet in the past. So, you know, again, I'm expecting, I think I have 5 or 6 companies that have drill programs running right now, and they all seem pretty happy and all are hoping they made a massive new discovery. I'll be happy if 1 or 2 of those, if 1 would be great, made a massive discovery,
right.
I'm rooting for all of them. So, you know, I've got a little silver company down in Mexico called Kingsman Resources. You know, they have 2 district scale projects. They're working on 1. It's a past producing silver, and gold and some of the other metals down in, the Parral mining district in Mexico. They're drilling for the first time under the water table. We should see results in September and October. It was a very, good silver mine back in the 1940s and 1950s. It produced, you know, 400 to 600 grams a ton of silver. You know, I'm anticipating that we will see these silver veins and hopefully more continue under the water table where they could mine back then. So that company's drilling right now. It's done very well. So, you know, again, if they have the success I think they have, the stock will go higher. However, if the market isn't as happy, and again, I think, you know, you can see a, you know, in any of these stocks, you can see a 25-30% draw. Not good draw results, but that's sort of my silver play right now. It's a, you know, obviously I'm in the higher risk part of the curve. Another company, you know, I like in the space is a company called Quartz Mountain. You'll recognize the name Bob Dickinson of the Hunter Dickinson Group. Bob's won almost every major award. Bob's in his young 70s, he's actually got more energy than I do. You know, and he's got the Prodigy target up on his project in Canada. He's had a discovery hole 2 years ago, did some more drilling 4 months ago, and the results were good, but they weren't what we were all hoping for. The stock held up fine because, again, the structure of that stock is that Bob Dickinson owns 50% of the flow, fully reporting. His largest shareholder, which is somebody from Saudi Arabia, owns another 18%. So you're talking about 68% of the company that's owned by those two gentlemen. So either way, I know that they're not making money if I don't make money. So right. I like his mythology. He's, you know, did second phase of drilling was, you know, 4 months ago and, you know, they learned some more stuff. We didn't have the home run that we hoped to have. I think his new round of drilling, it's the 3rd round. I think they're starting to figure it out. I'll know in September, October, but again, that's a company that's 75% owned by 2 individuals. So I'm happy to be a shareholder. They have to make a major discovery. And Bob has a history, as you know, the Hunter Dickinson Group, of what he calls transacting. He has sold many assets, built many companies over the years. So I'm rooting for him, and I'm a large shareholder in that company. So, you know, but again, if you want to look at some other gold and silver companies that, you know, again, were past clients of mine that I financed at smaller market caps, you met Revival Gold, Hugh Agro. They just raised $30 million. I think the market cap of the company right now is about, I'm going to say it's about a $80 million market cap company. And I think I financed them back at a $20 million market cap company 5-6 years ago. I think that company can grow. They've just had Dundee Precious Metals come in for 5% of the company. They've had some major funds. Again, they raised $29 million. They have 2 brownfields projects here in the United States, 6 million ounces of gold across those. Again, that doesn't mean it's all mineable. It doesn't mean it can be mined. They're proving that right now. They're past producing assets. But I think Revival Gold would be up the curve for somebody. Still very high risk. We're not talking Agnico Eagle or, you know, Newmont. Right. But, you know, someone like that, you know, in the PGM space, we talked a little bit about Bravo Mining, another past client. I think I did the IPO and that pre-IPO at a $50 million market cap. The company currently has about a $300 million market cap. It's a tier one platinum, palladium, nickel, and other things asset in Brazil. But again, you're looking at a company that Luis, the CEO and chairman of the board, who has actually built and sold the company before for $400 something million, he owns 50% of that company, fully reporting. So Bravo is probably less risk than the first two companies I talked about. But there's Bravo and Revival are still not you know, these are more, they're further along the curve, but you know, you're looking at, can these become $1 billion assets or $500 million assets? So that, you know, those are some other companies. Again, you know, my daughter always says, you know, when my friends and I joke, but sit there and argue for 45 minutes with a bourbon about a movie or when it came out, she finally shouts at us, why don't you guys look it up on the internet? You know, so when I encourage your users, again, you know, we've got the internet now. You can research these companies. You can look at them. You can find other interviews online with people. You know, just don't buy something because someone told you that, you know, dude, put a little time in, you know, research some of these names. But there's, you know, four names in the precious metal space. So.
Excellent. Yeah, I met with Hugh with Revival Gold in Florida. I was impressed with him and his expertise as a manager or as leading that company. But I was also most impressed with what I think they have in the ground and the jurisdictions that they're in. So anyways, just my two cents, not a recommendation. Talk to me about copper and uranium, anything that's on your radar, and why should investors have exposure, maybe not to these companies, but to exposure to both copper and uranium?
Well, I think, you know, again, uranium is a security of supply. We get a large portion of our uranium from not friendly places to you know, and I think you've seen the administration already fast track several mines here in the United States that, you know, to move forward and whether it's rare earths or uranium or, you know, even copper, people don't realize that something like 60% of copper from around the world is smelted in China. So the raw material goes to China. So again, to get the finished product, they're not mining all the copper, but you know, and when you talk about rare earths, antimony, you know, you're talking China. When you're talking uranium, you're talking a lot to do with, you know, Russia and Kazakhstan and, you know, in places like this. So again, I think uranium is very interesting. And copper obviously is the, they call it Dr. Copper. It goes into almost everything, right? All this electrification, you know, uses more copper. So, you know, the world never stops using copper and we've underexplored for it. It takes 20 years discovery minimum to a mine and we're way behind. So you just saw a project, I can't think of the name of it, is it Resolution in Arizona that has been in permitting purgatory for a decade and all of a sudden it's been approved. It's a major copper mine. So again, so all of these metals are the building blocks, but you know, as far as copper goes, I just financed a company called Kincora Copper. It's actually a prospect generator. Rick Rule, I did the deal, but I invited Rick in, and Rick and I were the two largest lead orders for that financing. Kincora Copper is a company. All of their assets, except for one, are in Australia. The geologists there are Newcrest geologists Newcrest was sold to Newmont. They're world-class geologists. They know Australia upside down. You know, they've got four or five projects already joint ventured out, you know, two major projects with AngloGold. So that's a prospect generator using other people's money to do the exploration, but you're giving up a piece of the property. Done. I think Kincora Copper is an excellent, you know, again, they're looking for a large copper porphyry deposit. They've got majors involved with them. Your risk, as far as a junior goes, is less than a prospect generator, although it's still high risk. So, you know, you have a deal there that Rick and I have both financed, and I bought the stock at current prices, even though it's higher than the financing. So I think Kincora Copper is a very interesting company. I just financed, I didn't have a uranium company, so to speak, in my portfolio of, you know, a dozen stocks that I try to keep. So I just did a really small deal called North Shore Uranium. It was a $2 million market cap. Even today, I think it's a $3.5 million market cap. And what the market hasn't as yet to recognize is they picked up 11 million pounds in New Mexico and in the past producing area of New Mexico that's produced most of the uranium for the United States in the past 100 years, 50 years. And if they can prove that project's amenable to ISR, which is a type of mining, it could be a very valuable project, much more than $8, 10, 12, 14, 20 million. So that's the process we're going through now to try to prove that it is a project that, you know, can not only grow in size, it doesn't need to, but if it's ISR amenable, it could be a very interesting project. That management team, the four individuals own 40% of the stock. Blake Steele, who is a gentleman I've backed before, is going to be joining the board. He's one of their large shareholders, but as part of the financing, he will join the board. He was at the helm of a company called Azarga Uranium, which had bought another uranium company that I'd financed 10 years ago. And then I helped the Zarga out as a large shareholder, and he eventually sold that company to Encore Uranium. So Blake has developed an ISR project, gone through the permitting issues, and sold it to a bigger company. So I decided to take a flyer on North Shore Uranium and see how they do. But again, we're talking about a minuscule market cap. I'm thinking if they can execute, they end up with a $40, $50 million market cap and hopefully graduate to the next level of other people financing them. Right now, it's a $3, $4 million market cap company at high risk.
So, so that's really key too. You're looking at, you know, I used to not want to go into companies, and I've changed my mind actually. And recently in the past few months, that was at least a $10 million market cap, but I've changed because why cap it at 10 million? And again, these are high risk companies, to all my viewers and listeners, but I'm missing out on the upside if it's less than that, if you would, if it's a good project, if it meets the criteria, being having a good project, good team, not only on the team on the ground, but a lot of money backing them, and in a sector I like. But talk to me, and I want to, first I want you to talk about just the royalty space. What do you think of the model? Is there anybody you like in there? But also after that, I want to talk about really, I started this whole journey of mine, talking with my daughter, developing a junior resource portfolio for her, and she's done fantastic. And it's been quite the journey just working through that, because she was really, I was in the same spot as she was about 30 years ago. I probably started this business around the same time that you did. What's one piece of advice you would give to somebody that wants to start developing a portfolio in the junior space, if you would, just one, because it can be so overwhelming. But before you go there, talk to me a little bit about the royalty model. What are your thoughts and that sort of thing?
Well, the royalty model for your listeners is it's different. It's probably the best area to be in the mining space. It's companies that, you know, basically take a, you know, either loan money or buy into a royalty in either an existing mine, or hopefully in some cases they're buying a royalty hoping it becomes a mine. They don't have to operate, explore, develop. They get a royalty off the production. So there's less risk for them. You don't have the inflation risk and everything else. They're getting a piece of that operating mine. So the royalty model, you know, the famous companies are like Franco-Nevada and Wheaton Precious Metals now. It's changed its name, so I get confused. But, you know, and Royal Gold and some of these bigger royalty companies that were started in the 90s, and they've just done fantastically well. I mean, they've, you know, just, you know, hit the ball out of the park and you know, the royalty model. But what happens is, when things like that happen and people have huge success, just like an area play in exploration, you have a bunch of people that jump into that space. So there's a lot of royalty companies. About a decade ago, you had more and more royalty companies popping up. And just because it's a better business model in the resource space doesn't make the person running it a better business person. Actually, Rick Rule said that, so I'll give him credit. Something like that. He said it better than I did. But, you know, so there's a lot of royalty companies out there that, you know, probably aren't going to do that well, but the business model is one of the best in the space. And you and I met at Rick's conference through a company called Empress Royalty, which I've been a shareholder of for about 3 years, and I got involved as a strategic advisor this year. Well, it's run by Alex Woodyer Sharon, and she is, you met her. I mean, again, I can sit there and tell you, but she comes from that background. She was with Endeavor Financial, which her dad had actually started a very successful mine finance and royalty companies spun out of that. The family was involved in companies like Wheaton Precious Metals and in the beginning. So Endeavor Financial is a big deal. And, you know, basically she started Empress, and the managing director of Endeavor, David Rhodes, is the chairman of Empress. And it's really to fill a niche to finance some of these streams and royalty companies. And they've executed. They started the company 4 years ago. They've reached this year cash flow positive, and they just had another quarter of 6 months come out, and they continue to grow their cash flow and positive cash flow. Now I think, you know, their value is getting more reflected in what they're doing, but I think you'll see them continue to execute. So something like Empress Royalty can grow into one of these big royalty companies down the road. And there's not so many smarter in the royalty space than Alexander, and she's just a wonderful person, high integrity, And her goal is to build a company that pays a dividend, or she sells it to a bigger royalty company. That's how she's going to benefit. She's not benefiting because her stock price is up and she's selling stock like 90% of these junior companies. So right. Empress Royalties, you know, I'm a big shareholder, and I'm really betting on her to continue to execute.
Got it.
So yeah, give me one piece of advice for somebody that wants to construct or beginning to stick their toe or even jump in. And I wouldn't recommend jumping in, but start sticking their toe into the junior space.
Well, realize first off, money you're putting into the junior space is your extra money. It's your, hey, I want to hit a home run type money. It's, hey, it's your higher risk money. So first off, I would consult with someone, whether it be a broker or, you know, really understand, is this space for me? Should I put a piece of my pie into this space? Because what I'm doing is putting a small piece of my pie into this space, hoping to get a very large return on that small piece of pie. I'm not going to risk my whole pie in that space. Of course I do, because it's my business. But again, most people shouldn't do that. And if you are someone that has the wherewithal and it fits your space, is to find a quality advisor, whether that's a stockbroker or a newsletter writer who knows something in the space. And there's a number of brokers, obviously, both in Canada and the United States, that specialize in natural resources. And it's a good way to start. And they can also tell you, you know, looking at your net worth and your goals, they can help you understand what you should position in those spaces. But often people use newsletter writers, and you have to be very careful. Just like in anything, there's good newsletter writers and not so good newsletter writers, and good brokers and not so good, you know, in anything, like an auto mechanic. You can have a good auto mechanic. So, you know, I highly encourage people to find a good newsletter writer. You know, I have a good friend that I've known for 10 years named Nick Hodge, and he's with Digest Publishing, and he has a private placement letter that's done very well over the last more than a decade, introducing people to private placements, but you have to be a high net worth individual and meet those requirements. He also has a monthly newsletter and weekly newsletter that the weekly focuses more on the natural resource space. But again, you know, a good guys too, is that when I recommend, and there's other great newsletter writers, but if, you know, I think as weekly as, you know, a couple $1,000 a year to subscribe to. And I'll have people, when I suggest it, you know, people I meet at conferences say, oh, that's expensive. I don't know if I want to spend $2,000 on a newsletter. Well, if you're not going to spend $2,000 getting some good advice, don't invest in the junior resource space. You don't have the money to be in that space.
Yeah. No, that's great advice.
That would be my advice, to definitely, you know, unless you're going to dive in and spend, you know, 10 hours a week making sure you talk to your managements and start to learn and really want to make it a side hustle for yourself. Find someone that's got a track record that, you know, is worthwhile and use them as a guide.
I couldn't agree more. And I'd also recommend, and this is a recommendation, just picking up the phone and calling people, whether that's the CEO of the company, which I do all the time, or whether that's the head of IR, and really just start having conversations. It doesn't mean you should invest in those companies, but what happens is you start learning, you just start picking things up, and then just start, again, making a list and writing stuff down.
I agree.
Yeah,
but remember, it's people and share structure. You know, you got to make sure your companies have people that have a track record. There's someone respecting the business. You've seen something that leads you to believe they are a high integrity person who's done stuff in the business before. And make sure the companies you're investing in, you know, have a great share structure, great, you know, not just insider ownership, but great shareholders that, you know, management should be able to tell you, that's why we like having XYZ as a shareholder. They're in this to see us develop an asset of hundreds of millions of dollars. They're not looking to flip their stock and make $10,000 and collect warrants. So,
yeah. Excellent. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for coming on. If somebody wants to do business with you or reach out to you, can they do that? And if so, where do they find you? Or should they just start keep on consuming content like on this channel? What should they do?
They should keep consuming content. I don't have a business again, Andy. I invest my own money. I know everybody in the space. You see me at the conferences, but, you know, realistically, I don't have anything to sell or anything else. I, you know, besides the fact that I, you know, do advise the companies I'm a large shareholder in. So if you see me at a conference, I encourage you to go to conferences. You know, like you and I met at Rick Rules conference, great conference to go to every year in Florida, fantastic conference. If you want to do one thing in the next year, go to that conference or go to the Gold Newsletter Conference in New Orleans. It's happening in, I think, November.
Yeah.
Walk around, meet people. So I'll be there. If you run into me and you see me in the interview, I'm happy to talk to you. I'm happy to share my ideas and what I'm doing. But again, I'm just an individual investing my money.
Got it. About that, you don't know this, but I told this to Rick several times. And that's where I met Rick, was at the, I want to say it was 94 New Orleans conference. In,
Oh, wow. You go back like I did way back.
Yeah. And I followed, and funny story, I followed him around that conference like a puppy dog. And that's really what got my, I started getting my chops in this business. And Doug Casey was at that conference. And I still have it right here. Casey's Crisis Investing.
There you go. I'm good friends with Doug. I know Doug well. And I actually used to do marketing back then in the 90s for him. So yeah, no. And you just said, you hit the nail on the head, you know, and Rick said that in interviews. If you go to a conference, walk around behind a Rick Roll or a Doug Casey or a Nick Hodge or a Jarno Del Rio or an Andy Millett or a Jeff Phillips and see what they're doing. Just pay attention and listen. You can learn a lot, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for your time. You were exceptionally gracious to me, not only at the conference, but just in our communication back between since then. And would love to have you on again in the future.
Well, I really appreciate it, Andy. Hope your listeners got something out of this. Again, I don't do a lot of interviews, so hopefully it went well for you guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a good day.
Have a great day.